me away.
I don't think you should, we're trying to keep the...
House Committee on Revenue for June 13, 2017 will come to order. Colleagues, we're looking for paperwork on a number of these bills, but one is ready, and so we'll open the work session on House Bill 2377. We had Representative Brock Smith here yesterday to talk about this bill, but why don't you give us the 30-second thumbnail, Kyle?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
As I recall, we have a dash A4.
We do. House Bill 2377 has the dash A4 amendment, which included some of the requested changes and comments received from the Department of Revenue. So that's been included there. And again, this is a permissive property tax exemption related to multifamily rental housing property. It's permissive to a city or a county can put this in place. We do have the paperwork now, the revenue impact statement. Again, as this is a permissive property tax exemption, there's no direct impact upon property tax revenues. It'll be dependent upon the number of cities and counties that adopt such a program and in what capacity that they choose to do that. There is some, just to give some context, I include in the impact explanation of the revenue impact a little bit of sense of the size of some of these multifamily properties. So they can certainly vary in scope, size, and value, depending upon location and the number of units. But so to give you the median property taxes that are paid by these multifamily properties is about $7,000. So that's the median size, but again, that could be a five or six unit property as opposed to some of the really much larger ones, in which case you can get up to hundreds of thousands of property tax dollars. Sure. And then the fiscal impact, there is contained in the bill, the city or county could include administrative costs in part of the application to help cover the costs of administering the exemption program. So that would help cover the cost of the city or the county. And there's no fiscal impact expected by the Department of Revenue.
Okay. Does that mean they could charge a fee to get this going? Or...
Yes, Mr. Chair, but the fee would have to be strictly related to the cost of actually administering it.
Administering,
so it would just be a minimal fee to cover those costs.
They won't be able to give it to school kids.
And if I understood the comments from yesterday, the amount might vary based on the number of units in the multifamily housing that qualified for the exemption.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's the trigger, some of the flexibility that the local government would have is the property tax exemption, the number of years, it has to be directly related to the number of units that are rented to households with incomes 80% or below of the area median income. Mm-hmm. So as that number of units or that percentage of units goes up, then the number of years of the exemption is required to go up as well. But exactly how that relationship would set up would still be up to the local government to decide. So there is a little bit of flexibility in place there.
All right. Thank you. Representative Johnson, the dash four.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendments to House Bill 2377.
Thank you. Representative Johnson moves the dash A4 amendment to House Bill 2377A. Is there discussion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, it's so ordered. We're on a roll. Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2377 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Johnson moves House Bill 2377A as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection to the motion?
Just comment. Oh, not objection.
A comment. Sorry, comment. Please.
I just want to say, I think, as I said in testimony earlier, that I think this is a good bill that could provide some relief to certain areas in the state where affordable housing is a real concern. But it's permissive and allows a local jurisdiction to design it as it works best for them. So I think it's a good effort, and I applaud our good representative for bringing it to us.
Thank you. Other comments? Okay, now I get to ask if there are objections to the motion. Everyone's quiet. No objection to the motion. The motion carries. And the bill goes to the floor with a do pass. And we'll ask Representative Brock Smith, I think, to carry. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2377. Paul, does Corinne have a report on where we are on the other bills?
And 3435, probably by 1:30.
By 1:30.
You have Representative Smith Warner here. You got 3443.
Oh, no, I can't move it today.
Can't move it today. All right. Okay. What I'd like to do, I'm told that we're going to have the fiscals available for Senate Bill 311 and for House Bill 3435 by 1:30. So what I'd like to do is take simply note that we're not ready on House Bill 3443, and we're still pending on House Bill 2064. So let's take a 10-minute recess. If we actually have them in 10 minutes, we'll move them out. I'm especially concerned about getting House bills out because of the time. So please be back in 10 minutes. Committee's in recess. Committee will come back to order. Colleagues, I am told that we now have the paperwork ready on Senate Bill 311, so we'll open the work session on Senate Bill 311. Kyle, you want to bring us up to date?
Okay, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 311, we do have the A6 amendment that's up there, and I'll list with the paperwork at this time. So just as a reminder, the measure, and I'll get to the A6 in just a second, the underlying measure is, again, this is another permissive property tax exemption, but it's relating to property that would be seismically retrofitted property. So this would be available, again, to a city could adopt a program, in this case, of providing a property tax exemption or a partial property tax exemption that would, in part, help cover the costs of retrofitting property up to seismic standards. The A6 amendment, there's a number of modifications that are made in the A6 amendment, but the substantive change is requiring the taxing district governing bodies that are agreeing to the exemption. So again, this is a permissive exemption, but it requires other local taxing districts to come on board and allow the ordinance or resolution that's being adopted by the local government. But so those local governments and part of that ordinance and resolution, it would include language requiring a limit on the property tax exemption, both the full exemption, the partial exemption, the total dollar amount, if you will, of that exemption would be included. So in the A version, there was a permissive option of, say, the city adopting a cap in their ordinance or resolution, but there wasn't a requirement to do that. In the A6, it would require that cap to be put in place prior to the ordinance or resolution being adopted, and then the local governments would impose that cap. So it could be a dollar cap, it could be a percentage of value cap or something to that effect. There's still, it would leave that open to the city that's adopting this, how to set that cap up, but it does require that cap to be put in place. And then again, there's some modification to some of the language that's in there that's really making some changes on the provision requiring plans and calculations and other documentation and such. But really the substantive change is that requirement of the cap. That's in the A6. And as this is a permissive property tax exemption, the revenue impact statement, again, is going to be dependent upon the number and ultimately how the program is adopted, what the cap would be by the local governments and such. There's certainly quite a bit of property out there that is in need of this retrofitting, so we did include in the revenue impact statement that this, dependent upon what's adopted at the local government level, this could be one that could be possibly millions of dollars in property tax revenue loss. But again, that depends upon what's adopted at the local level. And I'm looking at the fiscal right now. It looks like we have no fiscal impact for the Department of Revenue. And there is some provision of allowing the fees to be collected by cities and counties that are putting in place that adopt the ordinance or resolution. And it looks like fiscal is just identifying that the fees may not fully cover the costs to administer the program, but they are, the cities and counties are allowed to charge up to $200 for the first year of the exemption and $100 in subsequent years after that. So there is some offset in there to the any fiscal impact on the local governments.
Okay. All right. Colleagues, Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Kajan. Kyle, can you clarify for me, so we've got a cap that will have to be imposed on the local level. That locality in setting up a program won't have to report that cap in any way to the state level. I'm just thinking about this question of trying to control the overall impacts on a statewide basis. And if you you have a cap on a local level, then that's something theoretically that could go into some state controls over the amount of revenue.
Yeah, Representative Marsh, there's not a reporting requirement or something to the Department of Revenue or some overseeing at the state level. It would, when the city or the county puts this program in place, it's going to require the other local governments that are required to sign on to this, of course, mm-hmm. would see what that cap dollar is. So I guess that's the secondary approval, if you will, of the cap. But there's not a state-mandated cap on what that could be. So it could be $500,000, $5 million, something of that effect.
Thank you. I was just trying to see if we could figure out how that could feed into. I know Rep. Barnhart had a lot of concerns about an open-ended program.
That's a great question. Is there a time limit on when the exemption can be granted? I know there's a limit on how long it can run, but yeah. I don't think there's anything in the bill about when this goes away.
Yes, Mr. Chair, there is. So it's a 15-year exemption, and then it does sunset. The initial application for the exemption is January 2nd, 2028. Mm-hmm. So that's the sunset on the new one.
So there is a sunset
there
on
is, yes.
on applying.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
In section
okay.
six.
Thank you. I had missed that or forgotten it. I think that's pretty important if we're going to deal with long-term outcomes, because if people like it, they can get it renewed, and if it looks like it's costing too much, they can go away automatically. All right. Colleagues, what's your pleasure? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we know whose concerns the Dash 6s were designed to address? It's some pretty technical language about engineering standards and seismic evaluations, so I'm guessing somebody must have spoke up and needed more clarity. I just want to make sure that they are sufficient to address whatever the concerns were.
City of Portland guy's here. Dan's here.
They came from City of
City of Portland? You think you can answer that one?
Yes.
Okay. Good.
Excellent. Chair Barnhart, Representative Johnson, for the record, Dan Eisenbeis with the City of Portland. There is language in the Dash ACE 6 that addresses concerns regarding the manner in which plans that are submitted and stamped mm-hmm. as part of an application is described in the bill that were raised by the engineers and architects. The lobbyists for both of those associations asked me today that if there were any questions to indicate that they are supportive of the bill with the Dash A6 amendment. There is also clarifying language in the same section mm-hmm. regarding the option for local retrofit standards that essentially refines that option. If the standards are not the national engineering standards, to clarify that it's to enhance life safety in a seismic event. So that is something that we discussed and worked out with the Department of Revenue.
Super. Great. Thank you very much.
My recollection is that they were concerned about liability issues or something else. The engineer, sorry.
Permitting.
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that the engineers and architects wanted to make clear that the standard of care that they apply when preparing plans as part of an application under a local program authorized by this bill is essentially no more, no less than the standard of care that they apply when preparing other plans. And so the amendments before you have refinements to the language that make that more clear.
Thank you. Unless the governing body of the city or county has expressly approved or required a different standard that enhances life safety and assessment, I get you. So if they were preparing it for some other person, they would meet these standards, the general standards as well for seismic retrofit, not in connection with this bill, but just otherwise. I think that's what you said.
Chair Barnhart, if I may, this is a little confusing because the language addressing the concerns that are raised by different stakeholders is in the same section of the amendment.
So yes, it is.
The language to address the concerns that was raised by the engineers and architects has to do with the documentation that's prepared and stamped by a registered structural engineer or architect. And so on. The language that you just referred to that says that the application must meet the national engineering standards unless the governing body of the city or county has expressly approved or required a different standard that enhances life safety in a seismic event, that is a refinement that we worked out with the Department of Revenue to make that a little bit more clear and specific.
And I think that it's useful to have a specific reference, which we have in the line, couple lines above that. It's also useful in the event that that standard gets changed later to something more stringent, that the city or county could adopt the more stringent standard without us having to amend the statute to do it.
Mr. Chair, that's exactly right.
Yeah, thank you. Anything else? Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chair, I move the A6 amendments to Senate Bill 311.
Representative Johnson moves the A6 amendment to Senate Bill 311. Discussion? Objection to the motion? Seeing none, it's so ordered. You're on a roll.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 311 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Johnson moves Senate Bill 311 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Objection? Seeing none, it's so ordered. Colleagues, I'm at a loss to recall who it was that was the
Roblin.
Yeah, but I'm looking for a floor carrier.
Probably Gomberg, or I would be happy to do it also.
More of a City of Portland thing.
Yeah.
I think
but it's
it is.
It's a Coastal Caucus priority also.
It is, of course.
But as a City of Portland person, I'd be happy to carry it myself.
Right. Why don't you and we'll sign you and then
shall we thumb wrestle?
And you and Gomberg can fight it out.
Great.
All right. So Representative Smith Horner will carry. Well, that will close the work session on Senate Bill 311. And while we were in the middle of all that, we have two more fiscals that have come in. And so let's open the work session on House Bill 2064 and see what we can do on that one. If anything, Mazin's going to tell us all about it. We're talking about the Dash 9, I think, at this point.
That is correct, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The 2064-9 look close. I'm sure that you recall very vividly Dash 6. So,
very close.
Such a good amendment.
It's close to the Dash 6, and basically what it does. Let's take those amendments into the Dash 9 does. The first changes that allows for the for the local government taxes to be or local the uses in the different programs that are funded to slightly expand them, as you see in line 19. Line 25 of the second page of the amendment that increases the types of activities to include sporting events and festivals, and then encourage tourism and accommodate tourists, and then in E, developing and enhancing tourist attractions, tourist-related facilities, and generating special events and so on. So that's one of the main issues that this amendment deals with, which is that expansion. However, it The way it's different from the dash six is that it takes out some of the other more permissive uses. If you recall, in the dash six, there was the flower beds and the benches and so on. That was a big discussion at that time. Then the collection it redefines or sharpens the definition, if you will, for the intermediaries, the transient lodging intermediary, because an intermediary in the way the payments or responsibility for the payments is with them, so it expands that to be the one that actually either gets or charges for the occupancy, or that they receive a fee or commission, as you would see in line 1 through 3 in the fourth page of the amendment. So that makes it more precise of who is responsible for the payments. So that's the second issue. And then the third issue is that you have the liability for for one and the joint liability if one is responsible for the property, or more than one, all the owners are responsible for that. And then it aligns at the fourth and final, it aligns the definitions for the transient lodging and the payers and so on between the state definition and the local definition, and makes the payers, the intermediaries, and so on consider the same base for the payment, as well as that they are responsible to pay the local government and report to the local government on their activities. So that's what the new dash 9 does in a nutshell.
Great. Thank you. Discussion? Representative Smith-Warren.
Just to clarify, are we discussing the dash 9s or the dash 6s?
9.
Okay, thank you, because I was a little...
We just got the paperwork
in the
on
middle.
The 9.
Yes.
They're similar in some ways and different in others. And
like so many things.
Right. Colleagues, I think... based on the conversations that I've had, that those who are particularly interested in the issue of flexibility for the cities are in general agreement, except for those who believe that there should be no change. And I think there's one entity that is still concerned about the process of collecting and remitting the tax. But my belief is that if we're going to do anything on this bill this year, we need to move it and get it to the Senate for further consideration. If we wait any longer, I think that we are basically out of time. And I think we've made really good progress on this bill. What's your pleasure? What would you like to do? Representative Smith-Warner or Representative Marsh?
Well, I would just, thank you, Chair. I would just note that after we talked about this in our last meeting, I met with League of Cities and a number of representatives of entities to see if we could work on the language specific to Section 8. And I think there is broad but not universal support for the language we came up with, which basically says that whoever gets the money is responsible for paying the taxes and filing with local government. The problem is that that's a challenge for some business models, but I don't know what we could do to make, I think it is important to have something in statute that notes that all businesses are responsible for paying their taxes, and to help sort out in this complicated day and age which of the people who touch that lodger is responsible for paying the tax. So I do believe that that language is to a very logical point.
Thank you. I've noted on page 7, line 20, that that an agreement made between local government and a transient lodging tax collector would supersede this process in the bill.
Yep.
So, in other words, it's possible for someone who doesn't like this approach to make an agreement with a city or county to do it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And that would fall within the purview of the bill because of this exception.
Mm-hmm.
I think that covers at least some of the objections that people have. Representative Smith-Warner?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash line amendment to House Bill 2064.
Thank you. Representative Smith-Warner moves the dash 9 amendment to House Bill 2064. Further discussion? Objection to the motion? Hearing none, it's so ordered. Representative Smith-Warner?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2064 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Smith-Warner moves House Bill 2064 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been quite involved with trying to amend this bill, and I do like the way that, appreciate the way that it has, I think, narrowed the scope of what this transient lodging tax revenues can be utilized for. But I do think there's still a lot of uncertainty, I think, that remains to be worked out. And I guess I would just point out, too, that you'll recall we just had a fairly significant expansion of the transient lodging tax in the last session. And a part of that was setting aside a portion of those revenues that could be utilized locally for some of these tourist-related activities on kind of an RFP basis locally. And I don't think that's really had a chance to be implemented yet. So I think it's too early, I think, to make an evaluation about whether that's successful or whether that's going to help to meet some of these needs. But as much as I'd like to be supporting this concept today, I don't think I can quite cast an aye vote yet.
Mm. Okay. Thank you. Further discussion?
Could we stand at ease for a moment?
We'll stand at ease. And I'll note that those who want to okay. All right. So, we're going to hold it.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Representative Smith-Warner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I withdraw my motion to move House Bill 2064 as amended to the floor.
Thank you. Representative Smith-Warner withdraws her motion. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2064. Colleagues, we did get the paperwork finally for 3435, but given the hour and the fact that we have to be on the floor in 6 minutes, I'm going to hold that and 2064 over till tomorrow. Should I hold over 3435 as well?
You want to hold
3443, we should hold over till tomorrow as well. So 2064, 3443. And 3435 are held over till tomorrow. And committee, with that, we are adjourned. So, see you at 5 o'clock.